Thanks for tuning in to the Medevac Podcast, powered by the Robert Irvine Foundation, whose mission is to support and strengthen the physical and mental well-being of our nation's heroes and their families. I'm one of your hosts, David Reed.
And I'm your other host, Christian Myers. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Medevac Podcast. If you're new here, there's a price for the show. You have to share it with a friend or family member if you get something out of today's episode. And let me tell you, you're going to get something out of this one. Our guest today is James Bachan. He is a former naval corpsman, spent 4 years in the Navy putting Marines back together, and now he is a travel nurse in the DFW area. So welcome, James. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for being on today.
Yeah.
That's great. It's fantastic. How do you feel? Ready?
Sure. Ready as ever.
So let's dive right into kind of what got it all started. Like, what inspired you to join the military? Was it family?
It was a little bit mix of family, but also I got tired of going to school.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's a big common one we get all the time.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I joined, I was getting my associates done, and then I was like, you know what? 20 credit hours a week. I was like, I was burnt out.
Sure.
So my dad was prior Navy. Grandfather was Air Force, uncle was Army. And I was like, well, I joined because I wanted to do something more than just going to school and just working a dead job.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I still wanted to do something in medical, but didn't know what.
Is that what you were going to school for?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was pretty much my basics, but it was like medical sciences and all that.
Okay.
So,
Well, had you just graduated high school and this was your first semester, or did you work before then? Or
I worked before then, okay. Several odd jobs. So okay. Worked in a coffee shop, then also worked in a pharmacy. Hmm. You name it. I even worked in a lumberyard at one point.
So,
lumberjack. Is that where those massive arms come from?
No, that was just pretty much working on a farm because I grew up in East Texas. So, I mean, throwing bales of hay and just learn how to work.
Makes enough sense.
And so. I'm sure that translates really well into military career.
Yeah, sure did.
Mm. Yeah. So you felt like you were spinning your wheels a little bit and you decided to take the plunge and join the Navy.
Yeah, I decided to take the plunge. And it's funny, it's like I was going to join right out of high school, but my dad was the one that told me to get some college first. Mm-hmm. Figure out if I still wanted to do it, then to do it.
Okay.
Because he joined when he was 17, had my grandmother sign for him. Mm-hmm. And he was a CB.
Okay.
So, I mean, he had plenty of stories to tell too.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't join the Navy because of him, but I joined because out of going to the different recruiting offices, it was like, okay, who's willing to give me the best opportunity?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it was funny, I knew I didn't want to be a Marine because I didn't want to be, 0311 infantry. But then again, I was like, okay, I still think I want to do medical. So I was like, okay, well, who has what? Mm-hmm. Looked at Army. Army wasn't there. I was like, okay, nobody around Army. And then I talked to Air Force. Air Force showed up late to our house. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was hungover, had shades on, and then he was talking about he had two baby mamas and all this other stuff. I mean, he was like trying to act like he was cool.
Class action recruiter, huh?
So I was just like, okay, well, it looks like you don't really know what you're doing. So, but when I finally got to Navy, one of the recruiters, I mean, he sat me down and told me exactly what I wanted to hear. And he was like, look, I'm not going to bullcrap you. He's like, this is what we have. And he's like, if you want me medical, we have corpsman.
Yeah.
And I started off as a quad zero, just basic. And then halfway through, they were like, oh, you can do this, this, and this, and this. And it's like, oh, I could do more advanced training? Sure. And that's how I got into 8404.
Okay.
So... Yeah.
So what you joined in 2010, you said,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to basic training, you make it through that, yep. And then off to corpsman school.
Yep.
Okay. What's that like for you? Are you thriving? Are you enjoying it? Are you struggling?
It was almost like at least A school, mm-hmm. Corpsman A school, was because it was down at Fort Sam Houston when they did the sequestration and put everything together. It was almost like college again. Mm-hmm. I mean, kid you not, we were in our barracks, which were just glorified like freight containers that were all put together.
Yeah.
I mean, you wake up at a certain time, you had your DI there to drill you, made sure you did your PT and everything, and then you would sit in a classroom for 6 hours for a week. I mean, like the whole week, every day almost, except for on weekends.
And then testing on Fridays.
Yep. Every time. And it was just like, what the heck? Like I tried to get out of college to, it was like right back into it.
Yeah.
So, well,
did you enjoy what you were learning?
It was a lot more advanced.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, the whole unofficial model for a corpsman was like see one, do one, teach one.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that mindset. You know, we watched Death by PowerPoint, looking at all the slides on how to do stuff. And it was like right after, all right, well, now we're going to go do it. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And at this point, it's like I've never given a shot before. I've never started an IV before. You know, it was just all this stuff all at once.
Yeah.
But for me, growing up, since I was, you know, grew up on a farm and grew up in the country and everything, was like, well, I worked better with my hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that tempo.
That worked for me.
Difference yeah. from like that academic environment yeah. of just heavy book work
yeah.
to practical application using your hands yeah. made all the difference in the world for you.
Oh, yeah. Big difference.
Yeah.
So I learned at a faster pace. And it was like, yeah, I mean, I still did fine on the academic side of like taking the test, but it was where we actually did the practical side of like actually showing how to do it. It was like right that. Mm. Mm-hmm. So it was real quick.
That's mm-hmm. amazing. So did you graduated corpsman school.
Right.
And typically you have the option, or I guess it's the needs of the Navy, mm-hmm. but you can go fleet or hospital. Is that right. correct?
Yes.
And where did you go? Where did you want to go?
Well, I wanted to do more like emergency medicine, trauma, and all that other mm-hmm. stuff. And it was like, okay, well, and of course, you know, I had friends that were previous Marines when I was still civilian at that before I joined. And I was like, well, I do like the Marines. And I was like, oh, well, we're considered their medics. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, sure, I'll do the training, the field training to be at the Marines.
Okay.
And that's what I did. The option was there, so we did it.
Yeah.
So I was at Camp Pendleton and did that whole training stint. And that was fun, actually. I thought it was more fun than Corpsman A school because it was like, yeah, there was some classroom aspect of it. But it was like, okay, now we're going out in the field. We're going to be getting into the nitty-gritty. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A little bit more kinesthetic.
And when did you find yourself first exposed to that nitty-gritty, as you say?
It was when we did a... it was a combat training situation, and it was... they dropped us in the middle of the woods, basically. And we're like, okay, you're going to be given this point and this point. We're going to show you how to survive. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to see, of course, this was during the summer and everything. So it was really, really hot. So we're going to show you how to watch out for, you know, heat signs. Mm-hmm. So people that could be dropping out of the hike that are suffering from heat stroke or heat exhaustion, things like that. And towards the end, what really opened my eyes was, you know, granted it's frowned upon in civilian world, but it's like, I get the point of it, was you're given a live pig to save, mm-hmm. you know, somebody comes in and they cut the femoral artery. All right, what do you do?
Yeah.
And literally you have to jump in. And it's like, this is not only are you trying to save this pig, but also this is your way of showing that your skills are applicable and you know how to deal with all the chaos going on. Because you have an animal that's bleeding out and screaming, basically. Yeah.
Thrashing, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And I'd see guys drop out. I mean, they just couldn't handle the chaos.
Yeah.
But the thing was, is even though it's chaos, it's organized chaos. Mm-hmm. Because they've done this so many times.
It's controlled.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you fare?
I mean, at first I was just like, well, put all emotion out of it and just jump into it. I had the training. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, just jump in. Just remember what you were taught.
Sure.
And you know, of course, first time everybody fumbles up, everybody screws up, but it was like, I tried to keep my cool and well, obviously I made it through.
Sure. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. And I'm sure growing up on a farm, you probably wasn't your first exposure to right. blood and guts and that sort of thing.
Oh, right? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. This is a really funny one because a lot of people get really irritated when you tell mm-hmm. them that in the civilian world.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you understand the importance of being able to use a live animal to right. help save the lives of people? Like
right.
that's hands down the best training that anyone's gotten across the board for medical is the lambs and the pigs.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, like that is, it's wild to me. And it's a little bit of, you know, disturbing imagery for sure. But
yeah.
the lifelong, you know, objective of saving individuals is outweighs it, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And you know, that's what I also, you know, I hear about people complaining about is like, oh, why would they allow that? Well, yeah, I mean, being able to show that the skills work And it's like, okay, imagine all our modern medicine too, like all the, you know, medications that we use. Well, they had to be tested on something to prove that they work. And granted, we're not going to start it off on a person right away.
I'd just rather answer so that your father, mother, brother, or sister could come home. That's why we do it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and that's ultimately it. I mean, I've known people that have pulled back. That's their only exposure. Yeah. And because of that training, they've saved people's lives.
Yep.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff. And a pig screaming is no joke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is no joke. It's probably worse than a human's.
Yeah.
Yep.
High pitched. Yeah.
Yeah, very high pitched.
So how long after that did you find yourself deployed?
Only deployed 6 months.
So, no. Like, from
that
training.
So from that to actual deployment. But it was literally like, because from 2010 to 2014, technically we weren't really at war. So the real need for you know, field corpsmen, you know, devil docs, was not as high as it should be or used to be. Hmm. And so there were several of us that went through training and didn't get deployed. Hmm. You know, they were pretty much desk jockeys at that point, or they would go to some of the training battalions and they would be there with Marines that were just going through their training. And just because, hey, you know, you were 84-4, you know, field med, you're still with Marines, you're still doing your job, but you're not being deployed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there was very few of us that actually got to see deployment. Now, there was one corpsman that I met. He was an HM3 at the time, HM3 Fowler. He had 3 tours in Iraq. And, you know, he's still, as funny as he was in, I think, 7 or 8 years, still never picked up after HM3. And got, you know, sent stateside, and that's pretty much where he finished his career.
Hmm.
But
that's an E4, right?
E4, yeah.
E4, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, at the time when I was in, our job was overmanned by 125%. So picking up rank was
difficult,
hard.
Near impossible.
Yeah. When we did the advancement exam, and it's like you could know everything on that exam.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's no positions available.
Doesn't matter. You have the time and rank and time and grade.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense. What unit were you stationed with?
I was with 2nd MARDIA for a short time.
Okay, and where's that out of?
That's Camp Lejeune.
Camp Lejeune, okay.
So Lejeune.
East Coast.
Yep, Lejeune, yep.
Did you enjoy your time out there? Working with Marines?
Well, yeah, definitely working with Marines. It's funny because if you've met with any Marines, like, they have a different mindset on things.
Oh, they do.
But I love them. Yeah. You know, it's like there is always an easier solution, but they still choose the harder solution. And dealing with all the junior enlisted and some of the NCOs, it was like I had no issues with them. It was always the seniors that were the problem.
Okay.
Or at least some of the commissioned officers. Like, sure. They were straight out of OCS. Like, they had no time and experience.
Chip on the shoulder.
Yeah. Yep.
It's pretty commonplace.
Yeah. That is very commonplace.
Yeah.
You think that echoes with every story.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, Marines and infantry units specifically. Like, no, yeah. It's like, what are you even here for?
Yeah. Why are you here?
Yep.
So you end up deploying to Afghanistan.
Right.
And what year did you deploy?
That was between 2012 to 2013.
Okay. And what province were you in?
Oh, it was...
Or station?
It was... what was the name? I can't even pronounce it. What was it called?
Bastion?
The base?
Leatherneck?
Kandahar. It was near Leatherneck, but... Okay. What was it called?
It was Kandahar down there.
Kandahar is down there.
Yeah.
But all I remember was it was a small little area.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, when I was attached, we just mostly did patrols.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I rarely saw any of the fighting other than there were times that we, you know, they had too many stuff going on and I had to deal with a sucking chest wound.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like boom, boom. And then... You just medevaced.
Okay. Yeah. If you were in the Kandahar province or near Bastion, I was out there from January to July of 2013.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So I was flying Pedro out there.
Yeah.
So probably transloaded a couple people. We probably high five at some point.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny is like while I was still there, one of the funniest things that happened, you know, granted, you know, there was a lot of serious stuff, but some of the funniest things was we had Air Force that came through,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we had our tents and everything. Well, the funny thing was Air Force comes through and they're like, oh, we need your tents.
Yeah, I can't sleep outside.
What do you mean you need our tents? So our CO was like, well, y'all need to go, you know, dig some ditches. That's going to be where you're going to sleep for a while. I'm like, excuse me, what?
What? For, and I'm sorry,
yeah.
For who?
There?
For, yeah,
there,
I know, but yeah. For who? Who yeah. In the
and
Air
I was
Force
like, okay, why are they so special that they, and it's like, yeah, why are they so special that they get to have our tents? Like, what kind of, what's yeah. their mission, you know? They were just coming through.
Yeah, just passing through.
I was like, what? So what's funny is like, and talk about how funny the Marines were, is there's a few of the guys, a couple of Lance Corporals and a Sergeant decided to get back at them. So in the middle of the night, they snuck into some of their tents,
yeah.
took some of their gear, especially some of their whitey tighties. It's like, oh, I don't know where they went to. Like, I just, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
One of them took one of his boots. Like, so he had one boot, but the other one was missing.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it.
Yeah, it just yeah. sounds so ridiculous to me.
Therefore, yeah. so if we have to stay at a Marine base, you actually yeah. get additional pay.
Yeah.
So if you have to stay on the housing on base, you get additional pay.
Air Force is like
yeah. harsh duty or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We get jacked. And it's like when we were at on a Marine base, being Navy,
yeah.
we stay with the Marines in their barracks, yep. but we get nothing extra. Like yeah. no extra pay, nothing. Like,
so silly.
Oh, well, no, that's your job. But I'm Navy. Yeah. And this is different.
Yeah. But you're with the Marines, though. Yeah.
yeah.
You got to suck it
yeah,
up.
That was their excuse.
Oh, yeah. Well, I probably would have gave them shit, too. Maybe put, you know, a fire extinguisher through the vents.
A little yes. fart bomb on the AC unit. Just fills it up, you know?
Yeah, just right on the AC unit.
Well, you're going to say, you can remember field days doing all that and stuff. And it's like being in Marine barracks, it's still a piece of crap. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't polish a piece of crap.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
you can polish all right, you can keep trying, but it's still yeah,
still a shiny turd.
Yeah,
yep. Shiny still a turd.
So, what are some of the some of the missions and things that you dealt with? You mentioned dealing with a couple sucking chest wounds, and that's pretty severe.
Yeah, pretty severe.
Can you walk through that and build the picture a little bit?
Well, I mean, essentially, it's you're dealing with a human pneumothorax, so mm-hmm. it's you know with a chest cavity being exposed, it's your chest is always under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what keeps the lungs, you know, continue to fill with oxygen and decrease. That's how your diaphragm works.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in normal altitude, you know, air like this, you have a constant pressure on your lungs. So technically when you breathe in, your diaphragm's relaxing. So it's allowing that air to come in. And then when you breathe out, your diaphragm is pushing out. Well, when you have a sucking chest wound, you have a difference in pressures.
Mm-hmm.
So literally your lung cannot inflate.
Yeah.
So the problem is you have this negative space of air with nowhere to go and it's pressing on your lungs. And then on top of that, blood everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have fluid buildup too. You're literally suffocating.
Yeah.
So the sucking chest wound, what you're trying to do is you're trying to alleviate that pressure. So you put... And of course, one of the field trainings we did was like, hey, if you don't have a kit on hand, you can take a trash bag, you could take anything with plastic
mm-hmm.
and press it on there, tape three corners down and leave one as almost like a flutter valve.
Yep.
And it stabilizes them enough to where you can get them treatment.
Okay. So you performed this
yes.
in combat? Or somebody came back to the FOB?
It came back to the FOB, yeah.
And little needle D?
Yeah.
Little needle D as well.
Needle D, yeah.
Okay. So they had a gunshot wound to the chest or an explosion?
One was explosion. The other one was an actual gunshot.
Okay.
Well, I think it was gunshot, but I think it was more of a ricochet shrapnel.
Okay. And how did you respond? How did you fare? Did you find yourself enjoying being in that environment?
At that point, it was like, hey, training kicks in, yeah. brain, you know, all emotion kicks off and just do your job.
Yeah. Okay.
So at the end of it, it's like, you know, of course, everybody's like, even though you've been trained, after everything's settled, you're like, what the heck just happened? Like, yeah. yeah. And I remember the first time dealing with this, I was kind of like, okay.
Shaking hands.
I'm going to go get some coffee or something. I'll be right back.
Yeah. mm-hmm. Go take a breath.
Yeah. yeah.
Have a smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Well, so how was the rest of your deployment? You were there for 6 months, and
yeah.
while I was there, it was incredibly busy.
Yeah, it was incredibly busy, but for at least for me, didn't have that much action after that.
Okay.
I mean, it was I wouldn't say it was quiet, but when we would go on patrols, it was always stupidity that caused issues.
Okay.
So people, you know, guys being stupid, especially when you're bored or you're just there on fire watch. Okay.
Yeah. Do you have any, do you have any stories to recount from that?
I do actually. There was,
being with Marines. Fun things happen.
Yeah. 0311. There was a Marine captain. So, you know, 03, I don't know what his issue was, but I guess for him being on this deployment, he thought he was, you know, the big dog. And so there was one other corpsman other than me. And then, of course, we didn't have an actual medical doctor or anybody like that in our battalion. But we actually had, he was a, I think he was like a dental officer.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Very qualified.
Strong leader. I was just like, okay. But because he was a doctor, he was an officer, he was the one that signed off on like the morphine and everything else that we, you know, we checked out in our med kits. So it's funny, is like between me and this other doc, like we would rotate, go out and everything. Well, this officer didn't bother me as much, but it really irritated the other corpsman. Because anytime they went on patrol, he would go on patrol with them sometimes. And he would complain about the stupidest stuff. Like, oh, you know, my foot hurts, blah, blah, blah. Like he'd always ask for something from us. We're like, okay, dude, you don't need anything. Like, here's some vitamin M, here's some water, go sleep it off, you know, basically. Well, he irritated this one corpsman so much that there was one time, and of course I wasn't there, but I overheard what happened later on, but he called him out in front of everybody. And he told him, you know, if they came under fire and he got shot, he said, I would rather give the morphine to one of those wild dogs and watch it chew its own butt off and see you bleed out.
It's rough.
It's rough.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get some NJP, huh?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the captain got the idea. He was like, okay, I need to shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you're a captain, man. Stop complaining so much. You're making yourself look terrible.
Dude, you're leadership. I mean, come on.
You're the leader.
Yeah. At that point, you're like, dude, you're not, you know, proving everybody anything. Like you're supposed to be leadership. You're supposed to be the one in charge, and showing everybody how things are supposed to be done, and being professional.
Sure.
And just for some reason, he had that issue. So
such is life sometimes.
So. So that was a 6 month long deployment for you.
Yeah.
And then what did the rest of your career look like? Did you wrap it up after that or?
Well, I wanted to do more. But problem was, is there wasn't much. I mean, of course everybody else, you know, other higher ranking people got to choose their billets and everything. So, excuse me. For me, when I did my wish list for my next stations, I didn't really get to choose. I got sent stateside for a while, and then I went to Japan for a short period, so Sasebo. And that was nice. Yeah. I mean, the only action I saw was at the naval base. You know, you overlook the port, and here comes the ships coming back from their six-month tours, and I'm treating Marines and sailors from getting in bar fights.
Yeah. A little bit different at that point.
So, yeah. Or the typical STD panels.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That too.
Makes sense. And that's prevalent, right?
Oh, yeah.
Stopping in different ports.
Yep.
Sailors and Marines, what can you do?
So, so you decided to PCS out of the military.
Yep.
And what was next for you? How was that transitional period for you as far as diving back into civilian life?
Well, at that point, it was like you've been in long enough. It's like, okay, you have to relearn to be a civilian. And you'd think it'd be easy, like, oh, I get to do my own stuff. I get to be my own boss. But literally, you have no, like, idea what to do.
Because you have all the responsibility.
Oh, yeah. Everything's back on you again. Yep. Like, you're in charge of yourself. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
And it's funny is like, you know, obviously.
Accountability.
Yeah,
like, accountability. That's the biggest one.
Yeah.
Is all of a sudden you go from just being in your ass every single morning, every single minute, every single hour, to no one cares about me anymore.
Yep.
That's true.
Why do I have to show up for muster? What?
Yeah. Mustard.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm an Army guy.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, they have TAPS class, you know, for transitioning to civilian. Yeah. That still didn't teach me anything. Like,
how long was that for you?
That was how long?
Yeah, like 2 days, 3 days.
I think it was it was about 4 or 5 days.
Okay.
And it was funny because as the chief at the time, because I got out in Quantico, but my chief at the time, he was just like, hey, you know, you need to do this. And I was like, okay. He's like, oh, business casual too. You have to wear business casual. I'm like, the hell is business casual? You know, I'm like, so I mean, I just show up in a
tuxedo shirt.
I showed up literally just in a t-shirt and some jeans. He's like, that's not business casual.
This is fairly casual to me.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah. You said casual.
And I'm here for business.
Yeah.
I'm looking casual, here for business. That's
exactly.
It.
But I mean, they tried to teach you how to write a resume. They tried to, you know, teach you how to find a job, you know, what you could use your skills for.
Don't overplay it, brother. Yeah. Like, don't overplay it. It's pretty quick.
I mean, it was quick. Yeah. That's what I said. They tried to teach you.
Yeah. Don't,
but
you know,
it was literally, it was a government employee. Like he was a civilian.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And the resume training was just awful.
I know.
And that was the primary objective of that. I'll just teach you how to make a resume. I didn't learn a single thing.
Nope.
I didn't even know bullet points at that point.
Yeah. No kidding.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. They have to teach you a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I was just like, yeah.
Now, back then, though, like, you used to put on your resume that you were proficient at Microsoft Excel.
Yes.
Now it's just...
Now, if you're not proficient at that, like, you might as
you're
well...
You're done.
Yeah, you're not business casual.
Yep.
Too casual.
Too casual. Yeah, so, small amount of training, no accountability.
Yeah.
And then how do you find your headspace as well? Like,
I mean, one of the things how I found my headspace was I'd go to the gym.
Yeah.
It helped me think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was used to, like, I'm used to working with my hands. So when I'm doing something, I'm still thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to find my headspace of trying to wrap my head of being civilian, it was like, well, this is what I know. How can I still use that?
Mm-hmm.
And so granted, yeah, I was medical. So I was like, okay, what can I do medical civilian wise that I can get my, you know, have licenses or certifications, whatever it needs. And it's funny is because for almost every corpsman that gets out, no matter what their specialty was, they literally don't have anything civilian wise for you.
Hmm.
Or you have to really, really, really fight to prove that you know what you're doing.
You can't walk right into an EMT or paramedic position?
No. Yeah, they wouldn't allow that. And granted, at Corpsman A School at Fort Sam, you know, we were training along with Air Force and Army.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny is we were doing the same training, but they were able to get their EMT or paramedic.
Yeah, so Corpsman worked a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
I wonder if they've changed that since...
Well, from what I've heard, and granted for me, fortunate enough, I was able to challenge the Board of Nursing to get my license on top of going back to school.
Okay.
Because of all the experience that I had. And I had letters of recommendation and everything else I had to get from service members that I knew and stuff to help me out. But at least in California, from what I heard, most corpsmen that are just getting out now, they can actually challenge the board for at least for their LVN. But only California.
Okay.
Haven't heard anything about Texas, haven't heard about Oklahoma, anything else.
So, maybe that'll start to expand.
Or I'm hoping to. Because, I mean, the thing about, you know, for us corpsmen, if you were more than a quad zero basic corpsman, you had a lot of skills.
Absolutely.
You learned stuff that not even most nurses know how to do. And what's funny is when I switched to civilian, I was practicing, you know, being a nurse. You know, I know how to do vasectomies. I know how to do, you know, advanced procedures, you know, dealing with sucking chest wounds, dealing with all this trauma stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like some of these nurses, like, they may or may not know how to do some of those, but with their license, they're not supposed to or not able to.
Okay.
And so it was funny because I'm like, well, how do you not know how to do this? Because my mindset was like, okay, well, we were taught this. Mm-hmm. You should be able to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense.
It's common knowledge too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but dealing with, you know, physician assistants and doctors and stuff, you know, I would help them with some small procedures, and it was like, hey, doing sutures, that's a no-brainer. But the doctor's like, well, how do you know how to do sutures? Well. Really? Like, you're asking me that question?
It's a fairly basic medical procedure.
Yeah. But like, for instance, well, civilian-wise, when I was working at a private practice clinic in Missouri, one of our outpatient procedures for family practice was doing vasectomies.
Okay.
Now, granted, the doctor was the one that did the vasectomy, and it was a very simple procedure. Well, when I was still in the military, there was a, I mean, he was like a salty, salty captain, like a Navy captain, you know, 06. Mm-hmm. He taught all of us corpsmen how to do vasectomies that were underneath him. He's like, this is how you do it.
Interesting. Okay?
And he would stand in. Granted, yeah, it's under his deal, but he would stand in and watch us do them.
Okay.
And then, okay, there you go. You know how to do them now. And he's like, if he wasn't available to do them, you could do one for him.
Interesting. So you're doing barracks vasectomies?
Pretty much, yeah. I was like, hey, let me get my knife out. Like,
sounds terrible, and I will not take you up on that offer.
I got my K-bar.
Hey, just sharp enough. But no, I mean, it was all under a controlled situation. It wasn't like in the barracks or anything.
Yeah,
but it was the fact of like, okay, we learned how to do those procedures, sure. And we were still doing it under supervision. Mm-hmm. But it's funny is civilian-wise, talking to the doctor I worked with, I actually asked him, of course, and this is when I just got out. I was like, hey, I could do this procedure for you since we had a busy schedule. I was like, I could do it for you. He's like, you know how to do this? I was like, well, yeah. I was like, and I told him my background. He knew that. Well, and then he actually questioned me on how to do it.
Okay.
And I literally broke it down on how to do it, how much of a cut, where to tie it. Where to burn the ends off, like everything, like how to cauterize all of it. And he was just like, well, for the sake of it, I will be doing the procedure. You can definitely assist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little bit of liability.
I was like, liability. I was like, and I had to learn, like, how to learn about liability and like all the do's and don'ts.
Malpractice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame.
And they don't prepare you for that when you get out of the military, especially if you're medical.
Yeah.
Well, you're used to kind of thinking on your feet.
Yeah.
You know, making decisions on your own.
Yeah.
They do not encourage that in nursing.
No, they don't.
Yeah. So that must have been frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Yeah.
Which is why when I continued with my nursing, I started learning how to, get the licenses I needed to do the procedures.
Okay.
Because I got tired of just sitting by and watching. It's like, I know how to do this. Let me do it.
Yeah. So you have an opportunity to be more proactive.
Yeah.
It just takes the licensure.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was that mindset of, okay, there's always a right way and a wrong way to do something. Mm-hmm. Let's continue to do the right way so I don't get in trouble.
Sure. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you did you use your GI Bill to go back to school?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I did. And actually working on a radiology license right now, I'm still using the last bit of it.
Nice. Okay.
Because so, might as well use it.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you went to, where did you go to school?
So I went to UT in Arlington over here.
Okay.
And then right now for my radiology, I'm going through Parker University over here in Dallas. Mm.
All right.
And they have a pretty good radiology program. And I got 7 months left.
What's the interconnectivity? Like, so in, usually you have the radiologist who specifically does that.
Right.
How does that tie into your nursing background?
So it depends on where and what you want to do in the medical field. Mm-hmm. So if you still want to do procedures or you want to do advanced procedures, you can still be a nurse, but you may or may not be able to help with certain procedures because it involves radiation or involves special, nuclear medicine, mm-hmm. things like that. So you have to be licensed by a radiological board in order to even do that. Mm, so okay. It all ties into licensing and registrations.
It just gives you more exposure in a multitude of ranges.
Right. And of course, I've been asked like, well, since I'm already a nurse, why not become a RAT nurse, radiological nurse and help with that? Well, I don't want to just be a RAT nurse. I want to be able to do more than just that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for instance, with radiology, if you just get your basic X-ray tech, there's so many different avenues out of that because you have your license as a registered tech. Mm-hmm. You could also do interventional radiology, do cardiac cath cases, do lithotripsy, dealing with kidney stones.
Okay.
And even then, you could go into CT, MRI, all the other advanced imaging, and then branch into sonography or even nuclear medicine, which is another field of its own that's already started to branch off.
Sure.
And nuclear medicine is quite a growing field as well. So I would love for you to kind of dive into that a little bit as well.
Yeah. Well, with nuclear medicine, what's really cool is we have the ability to use radiation to heal rather than just do imaging or kill off cancer.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So with radiation, you can actually target certain cells in the body and not touch anything else. Mm. They call them radionuclides, which basically they take a certain type of radiation, whether it's an alpha, gamma, or beta radiation, and they attach it to a chemical component that's with some kind of medication, and that is engineered to go specifically to a certain part of the body.
Okay.
So for instance, let's say you have bone cancer. Well, they have a radionuclide tied to a medication that goes specifically to your bones. Mm-hmm. So when they put you underneath a they call it a gamma camera or a PET scan CT, mm-hmm. Your bones will light up like a Christmas tree while everything else doesn't get touched.
Interesting.
So it'll actually show where the cancer tumors are.
Yeah, and they can do targeted medicine from there.
And it's the same thing with nuclear medicine for thyroid problems too.
Okay.
So people that have hyperthyroidism, their thyroid's running amok, they just can't cool it down. Sometimes the doctor will tell them, all right, we're going to go through nuclear medicine. We'll see what the radiologist or nuclear medicine, radiologist will say. And they may dose that thyroid with radiation to basically ablate or kill off a portion of it so that it starts working normal.
Yeah, so it's not hyperactive anymore.
Exactly.
Oh, that makes sense.
So what's really cool was one of the things I saw from nuclear medicine was they literally give you iodine. So iodine that's been irradiated in a pill form. Mm-hmm. And you swallow it. Well, with beta radiation, it doesn't hurt you if it's outside of the body. And there was like a whole bunch of technical explanations from what I remember. But basically, the only way beta radiation can hurt you is if you actually ingest it.
Okay.
Because it penetrates the cells on the inside, but your skin acts as a barrier. So iodine is naturally absorbed by your thyroid. So, ionized salt is what goes to your thyroid. Your thyroid absorbs all that. Well, that's what they realize. If they irradiate iodine, it goes straight to the thyroid and touches nothing else. So that's how they treat hyperthyroidism or certain thyroid disorders.
Interesting.
What are some other crazy, cool, new technologies or medical procedures that you see coming out or even potentially coming out in the near future? I mean, now we have the implementation of AI on medical devices.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I'd love to see kind of what the future is looking like in the medical.
Well, one of the things I've seen, and I've seen in person and also seen through some of the research that they provide for a lot of the nurses and doctors has been, all these surgical robots. Literally they can peel a grape. These robots have the different arms, can peel a grape to the finest spot, do micro sutures, put it all back together like nothing happened. Mm. So minimally invasive that you're like, man, not even a surgeon can do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other deals for, let's say, interventional radiology I've seen, it's still experimental, is most cases when you get a blockage in an artery around your heart, usually they do a stent or a catheter. So essentially it's like a balloon that has a wire mesh on it. Mm-hmm. They'll go in through the femoral artery all the way up, and then they'll find that blockage. They will balloon or basically cause that catheter to push out that wire mesh and push that plaque or blockage against the arterial walls and then basically cause free blood flow again. Mm-hmm. Well, what they've started to do now, at least from some of the experimental stuff that I've seen, is literally how I see it is a Roto-Rooter for your plumbing. It's they start off with a catheter, but it has a secondary piece that goes through that acts as like a drill that scrapes.
It's like a bore.
Off the plaque, yeah. Like so they drill it all off while it's blocked off. Yeah. And then they come in with suction and suck all that out.
Wow.
So they get rid of the plaque completely.
Nice.
So no more stents. You just completely clear it
out. Now, granted, it's still experimental from what I've seen, because I don't see very many of that happening, but it's going to be a newer procedure that I can see being more efficient than just putting a stent.
I mean, yeah, that completely resets everything. Because stents still fail after a certain amount of time.
Oh,
you're still
of course.
Accumulating plaque and all the buildup. Well, so with you're going to school for radiology now. Right. You said you wrapped that up in about 7 months.
Yeah.
What are some of the new procedures or the new portions of medicine that you're most excited to get into?
Definitely the dynamic x-rays.
Okay.
So with that, normal x-rays, you have to hold still. You take a picture depending on positioning. Dynamic x-rays is literally you are standing there for your x-ray, but you can move that joint and watch it under an x-ray move just to see how the joint works.
Mm. Mm.
So it's very fascinating. And comparatively, when it comes to a standard x-ray versus a dynamic x-ray, it's very little difference in radiation.
Okay.
So literally it's like, like a sci-fi movie. Yeah. You're seeing somebody's bones and joints moving underneath radiation.
So, I mean, that could have a lot of practical application for physical therapy.
Oh, yeah,
For finding impingements, for looking at gait analysis for athletes. I mean, that sounds like Total Recall. Remember that movie?
Yeah, very cool stuff, yeah.
And at the airports here in a minute.
They weren't far off from it, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. But with dynamic x-ray and all that, I mean, radiologists can still miss stuff,
Absolutely.
Doctors are not infallible. I mean, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
But with that advancement of technology and medicine, I mean, it's harder to screw up. Like, you can see where there's an impingement, or you can see where you could actually have like a small microfracture, Hey, my arm's been hurting forever. Like, it's still bothering me. Well, we didn't see anything under your x-ray. Well, with the dynamic one, you could actually possibly see it.
Yeah, start to move around, get different angles.
That's going
to
help tremendously for like rotator cuffs, hips.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, my God, knees, the joints in general.
Yeah,
everything.
So we know that the medical field is ever-changing and continuing education is pertinent. So I'm not going to say like, where do you see yourself like ending up, but where is a goal for you to be at? What qualifications do you want to get under your belt in addition to radiology in the next few years?
Well, I would say that I would still like to have autonomy like I did in the military. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still love
the nurse practitioner.
I wouldn't say nurse practitioner. Nothing against nurse practitioners.
Yeah.
But one of the things I was told one time was when you talk to, the regular community and the medical community, when you hear it's a nurse practitioner, they're not taken as seriously compared to a doctor or a PA.
Well, exactly. I mean, as far as the nursing field, this is probably as autonomous as you can get.
As you can get, yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, I would probably autonomy wise, I'd probably go with the PA route.
Okay.
Oh, so you would, so you're thinking that maybe you would change career fields essentially. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's like, part of me is like, especially in the military, I had that mindset of jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I've been in the medical field as a civilian.
Yeah. You're afforded that luxury. You can bounce around at different jobs and still.
Yeah. And it's like, I always loved learning new stuff.
Yeah.
And I had that opportunity when I was still in was, hey, okay, I didn't like working, helping in physical therapy. Let me do this. Or so I would jump into x-ray, or I'd jump into just the trauma. Or there were so many ways I could do stuff. And there's like, nobody said no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So civilian wise, it's like, oh, well, you specialize in this and you can't go into something else unless you go through the training and you go through all the licensing and blah, 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 blah. Because it's all about liability.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I had that opportunity when I was in to be able to try different, departments.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, it's like, hey, that's how I kept my mindset when I got civilian and became a nurse and started doing, different stuff in the nursing field.
So you said that you're a travel nurse.
Yes.
What does that entail?
So it involves long hours on the road. may or may not be able to take a I'd say duty station that you may not like. Mm. But it has its perks because you may be there for 8 weeks or you may be there for 3 months, you know, however long the contract would be. You don't have to deal with the office politics. Mm-hmm. You don't have to deal with the hospital politics because you don't officially work for them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the perks I liked. Mm-hmm. Other one is sometimes you can set your own hours.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say being your own boss, but more of like you can say no if you want to. Mm-hmm. And there is some wiggle room.
Okay.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it allows you some flexibility. So it does. While you're at school right now, I imagine you're not traveling too far from the local area.
No. Yeah. So I'm still within the DFW area.
Okay.
Before then, I was traveling between Oklahoma, Louisiana, a couple other places.
Okay. And is that if they have a need? Like if there is a shortage?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, is it more specialty driven? Or
it's more of a shortage. And then they do look at your background. Like, okay, what do you have specialty in? Like, mm-hmm. what have you worked in before? They do consider all that too.
Okay.
So, but the biggest thing has been, shortage. Because unfortunately with our healthcare system, the hospitals are a business. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't fake it. I'm sorry. So they're still treating their nurses and techs and doctors like crap. Mm. And so the incentive to stay is not there anymore. Mm. And I've seen that with you know, people that have been doing it for 20 plus years.
Wow.
Yeah. And a tremendous amount of pressure from the board, from the medical board.
Oh, yeah.
Put pressure on these docs to make decisions that they would not normally agree to as well.
Exactly.
Mm. And we saw that during COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the problem. So, but if you get enough people to stand up and say, okay, back off, we're going to decide what to do with this. It'll change.
It's a Goldfein's statement about putting the power back in the squadron command.
Yep. True. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting, man. And, really appreciate, you know, your service and also your continued service on helping not only veterans, but you know, the civilian population here as well, which is tremendous that you're going after and educating yourself so that you could excel in this field and do it just like a Marine, JK Corman would do.
Hey, it doesn't offend me if he called me a Marine too, because hey, I was with him.
It's, you know, most corpsmen that I talk to, they go, I'm Navy/Marine.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's fair.
I was both.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are.
That's fair. Everybody loves medics at the end of the day. So
yeah, of course, you know. We're the best friends. Especially when you're drunk and you need that IV.
Absolutely. Well, yeah.
Especially if you get blown up. Yeah.
Or that too.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Well, James, thank you very much for joining us today. It was a real pleasure getting to know you and hearing your story.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you opening up. Where can we find you? Where can people, if you like to have people reach out to you or if they want to get in touch with you?
Is there a
good place for that?
I'm on Instagram. Yeah, I'm on Instagram. Granted, it's mostly for my bodybuilding, but, Devil.Fitness.
They'll want to check that out.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I haven't competed in a year because I've been busy with schoolwork and everything else, but yeah, I mean, that's where most people can reach me if they want to.
Perfect. So. We'll include that in the bio and thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
This has been the Medevac Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for watching. Be sure to interact with the video somehow. We would do the same for you. We'll see you guys next week.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.